This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Big day today. It is hump day. It is Wednesday, August 26th. Been counting down until Wednesday, August 26th, because it's our draft-a-thon show tonight. Please join us from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern. You, the audience, will be interacting with us. We'll be reading your chat questions, and we're going to have a mock draft during the show with two spots in the draft just for the audience. And then you get to vote in a poll and make the pick. How cool is that? And we're all here today on this Wednesday morning to tell you the players that we keep on drafting here for 2026. I'm Adam Azer. Dave Richard is back. Hey, Dave.
What's up, fool?
How's your trip?
Good. I'm tired. Yeah. Saw a lot of stuff. Can't wait to tell you guys about it.
Yes, we're going to hear about that. He went to Raiders camp and saw Ashton Jeanty get hurt and then be okay. And
I don't know how okay he is, but he definitely got hurt.
Saw the Jaguars. He saw the Bucks. So we'll get some inside info from Dave. Hello, Heath.
Were you there when Brian Thomas got hurt also?
Right in front of me. Literally right in front of me.
Don't go in the room with Dave this week. Jeez, you got a bad
No kidding.
Well, he was
so
there
far
with
in the last 7 days, I've heard a running back, a wide receiver, a pizza restaurant. I'm on a roll.
Yep, and you heard Dan belching for a half hour too.
So. Now that killed me.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the players we keep on drafting, but with a little bit of a twist. I'm going to argue against them. I'm going to play a little devil's advocate, make you defend, not all of them, two for each of you. I feel like we've moved past that portion of draft preview where we're debating things, and I think we need to get back to that. Let's have some debates here.
Yeah.
So let's do part one of players we keep drafting with a twist, and just give me two. You gave me kind of longer lists, but we'll go one each, and then we'll go one each again. Let's start with Heath. Who's a player you keep drafting?
I didn't give you a long list.
No.
I gave you like 3.5 guys.
Yeah, not that many.
But
what do you give a half?
I mean, we can start with the guy that up until Jamie took him in our last draft, I had drafted in every real draft that I'd done so far this season, and it's Sam LaPorta.
Okay. So you want me to just get right into the why you?
I think everybody's heard my case for Sam LaPorta 75,000 times this offseason. So you can go ahead and do your well-researched, he hurt his back last year, his hip hurts right now. That's a problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, I wonder sometimes if I think I'm guilty of this too. It's like, I really like a player so much, and then he gets hurt in the preseason, and I don't want to care, right? And I don't discount him enough. How much have you discounted him since the hip injury, which may not be a big deal at all?
Right. I haven't really, because it was like he got hit really hard in the hip. I've heard nothing about any structural concerns, any ligament concerns, anything like that. If it was like something where it could have been related, like he's got sciatica and it's related to a back injury, or he's got a hip flexor that he like pulled or something like that, then I probably would have. I think it's really, and it's probably just because we have so much more coverage than we used to. But I think it would be a shorter list if you made a list of guys who have not gotten hurt this preseason than guys who have gotten hurt this preseason. Like, we had 6 guys get hurt yesterday, and most of them, we don't think it's probably any big deal. We're going to get to week 4. And there's going to be like 8 guys that we say, yeah, we should have known he was hurt in the preseason. Well, so were 80 other guys.
Well, why are we talking? He's back at practice.
Right. This is like a good thing.
Okay. So my other arguments against Sam LaPorta have nothing to do with the injury. He was tight end 1 overall, tight end 3 per game as a rookie. In that season, Jameson Williams played 12 games and had 42 targets. Since then, Sam LaPorta has been tight end 9 per game and tight end 7 per game. Obviously, Jameson Williams has had a bigger role in that stretch. Additionally, you could even look at last year. He was tight end 7 per game, played 9 games. He had 49 targets. So he's getting what? How many targets per game is that? 49 divided by 9? not a lot. 5.5 targets per game. And in that stretch, Jameson Williams wasn't even getting targets. Jameson Williams is getting about 5 targets per game. So I'm worried that he's a really good player, Sam Laporta, but hasn't shown that he can be an elite tight end when Jameson Williams is involved. And even when Jameson Williams wasn't that involved, and then the next two games after the bye before he got hurt, you had both of them get 13 targets. They made a point after the bye, even before the Laporta injury, say, we got to get Jameson Williams more involved. They did. They both had 13 targets in weeks, I want to say 9 and 10, and then Laporta got hurt. So it's really my biggest concern is that he just hasn't been an elite tight end without Jameson, with Jameson Williams really, you know, being a part of the offense.
Where would you draft him?
Yeah.
Round 7 at the earliest.
He has a round 7 ADP. He is currently being drafted as tight end 6. Not even a full spot, fraction of a spot ahead of Tucker Kraft. Probably will change by tomorrow with the rate Laporte has been falling in drafts. So I think he's not proven that he can be an elite tight end except for the year that he finished as the number one tight end.
No, with Jameson Williams.
Well, right. I think that most of the history we have suggests that when those two are on the field, it's been more Laporta than Jameson Williams, and they just hired Drew Petzing as their offensive coordinator.
By the way, look at where he's going right now over the last 5 days on NFC draft position, average draft position. That's 71 drafts. Sam Laporta is going 99th. It's tight end 8. That's awesome. Steal.
So,
but at the same time, the tight end ADP is pretty low. Tucker Kraft 80th, Kyle Pitts 81st, Harold Fannin 92nd, Sam Laporta 99th. That'd be amazing value. All right, Jamie, you're up. Give me a player.
I don't know who you have an argument for.
I can do the argument at any time, but the players I picked for you were Justin Herbert and DeAndre Swift.
There you go. Pick one.
All right, let's go to Justin Herbert. This one.
No, let's go Swift.
Okay, let's go.
So I gave 5 names, and you chose one of the 5 that I shared with Jamie to argue against. Right,
I thought ahead. That would be better, you know, because you know that it's like I'm getting.
Let's go Herbert then.
All right, look, you Herbert or Swift?
Herbert.
Okay. Yeah, I mean Herbert, I think is pretty safe. He pretty much always finishes as a top 12 quarterback. But the only times he's been, you know, an elite quarterback, he's averaged over 39 pass attempts per game. That's not really the MO of Mike McDaniel. He's more of a slow pace, run the ball kind of guy. That's basically it. He also, as good as Herbert was last year, is on pace for 529 rushing yards. And he's usually more like a 300 rushing yard guy. So that was really strange. So let me get rid of this Laporta ADP here. Thank you. So anyway, yeah, it's just he's only been elite when he's thrown almost 40 times per game.
Fair point. He was averaging over 25 points per game last year in the 6 games with Joelle. The offense was scoring over 25 points per game in the 6 games with Joelle. And now you're getting Joelle back for the season with Rashawn Slater. So losing Biotic sucks, their center. That was, you know, just an added strength to it. But I just think when Herbert has things working around him, I'm sure Heath will laugh at this, but when Herbert has things working around him, he will be in a very good spot to succeed. So he's in that jumbled mix of quarterbacks. If you're looking at the rank list, the consensus rank list on YouTube, if you see it on our site, basically after QB6, it's Prescott, Herbert, Lawrence, Williams, Purdy, Goff, Dart, Mahomes. Who am I missing? Goff. No, he's in there. I don't know. The 6 or 7 quarterbacks that all go in that range of, I love Caleb Williams, or I think this is Trevor Lawrence's year, or Dak's going to be awesome once again. You want to put him at the bottom of the list, that's fine. I just think that Justin Herbert's a very good value. I think he's going to have a good season. I think as long as his tackles are healthy, or at least one of them, he has a chance to be successful. And I do think that Mike McDaniel, yes, while having the ability to be an offensive genius, also does not necessarily say, hey, I'm Ben Johnson, I'm going to throw the ball all over the place. Hey, I'm this guy, I'm going to open up things like crazy. He did, as shockingly as that may seem right now, watching that guy play, he got Tua Tagovailoa,
yeah,
to lead the NFL in passing yards.
Yeah, amazing.
Tua Tagovailoa.
So I have a better, I think, argument against Herbert. Sorry, Heath, I'll let you jump in. But it's more like you have to commit to taking him ahead of players who might be just as good. Yeah, you know, he's in a big tier, and he seems to be at the top of the tier. And that's, I guess, the more of the argument is like losing value in ADP. That's all.
Yeah, I think, and I'm not the biggest Justin Herbert guy. I'm not sure if I've made that clear. I think he's fine, and where he's being drafted's pretty close to fine. But he's going like a full round behind Caleb Williams and behind Trevor Lawrence. And so my thing I was going to interject was I think we should pass a rule for Adam's devil advocate. If a player is being drafted after the first six rounds, the argument can't be he's only been elite when. Because we're drafting the guys in round 7 and 8.
Like, no, I think that applies for running backs and wide receivers because there's so many of them going in the first 6-7 rounds. But for quarterbacks and tight ends, especially for quarterbacks, we expect to find elite quarterbacks all throughout the draft. You're taking Sam Laporta in round 6. I mean, there are potentially, I don't know if they're potentially elite wide receivers there. There might be. There's Christian Watson and there's Mike Evans and guys like that. And Parker Washington, but all right, fair enough. If you want to, this is, as somebody said in the chat, beat up on Adam Wednesday. All right, Jamie's made his case. Dave, who's your guy?
As opposed to beat up on Adam Thursday, beat up on Adam Friday, beat up on Adam Sunday. It's kind of a thing we do. Let's talk about CeeDee Lamb, who I have gravitated toward taking with a late first round pick in full PPR. When I'm picking 8 through 12, and there isn't a running back there that I just think is a slam dunk over him. Those running backs are usually Jonathan Taylor, Chase Brown, James Cook. I look at all the other running backs that are left, and I like them, but there's a lot of them, and there aren't a lot of wide receivers left. And so I'm going to gravitate toward Lamb, and I'm going to look at those 6 games, and we've talked about this a decent amount during the offseason. There were 6 games with Quinnen Williams in Dallas, meaning – all right, they acquired this awesome defensive tackle. He made their defense better. He changed how much they passed. And there were 6 games. In those 6 games, this is week 11 through 15 and then week 17, Lamb averaged 16.4 PPR points per game, 10.9 non-PPR points per game, 9.2 targets per game. And over the course of the entire season, CeeDee Lamb had just 3 touchdowns. He had a high ankle sprain that seemed to limit him. He's healthy now. I don't think he's going to catch just 3 touchdowns. I think he can double that. I think it's possible he can triple that, and he's still going to get a hell of a lot of targets in this offense. I know George Pickens is there. I know what Pickens is capable of doing. I still think CeeDee Lamb is the straw that serves the drink here, and I'm going to take him as the 5th wide receiver off the board with that late round one pick. I mean, excuse me.
Okay, devil's advocate. He's not even the best wide receiver on his team. George Pickens has been a more efficient wide receiver throughout his career than CeeDee Lamb. And I think guys with high ADOTs usually are more efficient, but Lamb actually had a higher ADOT than George Pickens last year, and Pickens was still better on a per target and per catch basis. And in week 7 through 17, after Lamb came back from the injury, excluding week 18, where they played half the snaps, half the game, Pickens scored more fantasy points per game. So you got the wrong cowboy.
Excellent. 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 So the guy I keep drafting most often is George Pickens.
Okay. Well, I'll let Dave respond real quick to that, and then we'll go into George Pickens.
The one thing that's really got me shook on both of these wide receivers is this track record that I discovered over the last, 15 years or 11 years, something like that, where only one receiving duo has repeated top 12 season over season. Last year, it was close between Chase and T. Higgins. They both finished top 13 in PPR points per game. It's rare. So how do you split that? Well, you could look at the stat that you gave, Adam, but I don't know how much of that is fair. I don't know how CeeDee Lamb performed in those games before Quinnen Williams got there. And I know that the Dallas team operated differently once Quinnen Williams got there. There were 3 games in 2025 where both Lamb and Pickens each had over 15 PPR points. There was another 2 where they had 13 plus, which means there were 8 games where one of them did not have 13 plus PPR points. And it was usually your guy, Mr. Efficiency, George Pickens, which is why I feel like Lamb is the better pick, the safer pick. The targets per game definitely favored Lamb. I'm going to go with Lamb.
And I just want to be clear. I'm playing devil's advocate. Doesn't mean I believe all these things. I would also take Lamb over Pickens, but Pickens, the main reason Pickens was better than Lamb from week 7 through 17 was what Dave already mentioned. Lamb just didn't catch enough touchdowns. If I can get the total weeks.
I mean, Pickens was pretty low on touchdowns in that stretch too, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Dak's touchdown rate wasn't as high as it could be. Dak Prescott, Jamie and I, we talked about this on the network show on Friday with Dan. D- Dak Prescott was on pace for almost 4,900 yards. I know we're not talking about Dak here, but in that stretch, he was on pace for almost 4,900 yards. The reason why he wasn't like a league winner, basically, is he didn't throw that many touchdowns. But if he can get the touchdown rate back up close to 6%, he could certainly be a top five quarterback. All right, I'm going to let Heath talk about why he's drafting George Pickens, but we do have to take a quick break here. So just a couple things. Again, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern tonight is our draft-a-thon show. Please join us. We need you there. We need you participating. We have got, man, so many guests. Ben Gretsch is coming on, Jake Seeley, Joe Pisapia, Nando DeFino, hopefully Scott Fish. A couple guys from Sportsline are going to be joining us to give us some player props that they like. We've got Rich Rebar coming on to talk advanced stats. I know I'm forgetting. Oh, we got the Front Yard Fantasy guys on to do some fantasy feud at 6 o'clock. What?
I apologize. I did talk a little trash last night on Joey Wright's birthday stream. Yes. about how we were going to beat them.
Love it. The other thing you need to know is while we...
Nando's making posters, by the way.
Nando has already made me so angry today.
Oh, we know.
Well, you don't know. I mean,
yeah, we do.
But you don't know the draft pick he made.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
You know that he took Breece Hall over Javonte Williams, and it made me crazy.
Why did that make you crazy?
That's the one that made you crazy.
I have Breece Hall ranked higher than Javonte Williams.
Well, you're wrong. You should.
He's a bell cow. Didn't you hear Frank Reich? He confirmed it today.
So is Javonte Williams on the Cowboys. Nando's coming out tonight. The other thing we need to tell you about is our Must Draft Players page. It is amazing. Must Draft Players page, cbssports.com/FFT Must Draft. It features exclusive picks from the FFT crew organized by where we target these players throughout the draft. So as you move through your draft, you can see which players we think you should be targeting in each range. It's brand new, so be one of the first to check it out at cbssports.com/FFT Must Draft. We'll be right back after this. Back to players that we keep drafting. Heath, George Pickens.
Yes, and I want to say I agree with Dave drafting a lot of CD Lamb the last three or four picks of round one, and I draft George Pickens in round two. So I am expecting them to repeat. I expect these two to dominate targets. I have them projected, if they both play 17 games, for a total of 300 targets, which sounds insane. But Brian Schottenheimer's been in Dallas for 3 years. They've averaged 618 pass attempts per season. They've been top 10 in pass attempts all three of those years. And the last 2 years, the defense has been awful. I get it. But in 2023, Schottenheimer's first year as an offensive coordinator in Dallas, they had a top five defense in both yards and points allowed. They were third in passing yards and first in passing touchdowns that season.
I love
this. This is going to be one of the most pass-heavy offenses in the NFL. CeeDee Lamb's awesome. George Pickens is awesome. Dak Prescott is awesome. Just draft them all.
I'm so glad you brought that up because we've gotten that question a lot about their improved defense and Cincinnati's improved defense. And first of all, you're talking about two of the worst defenses in the NFL. Like, they're not going to be top 10, I don't think, this year. But yes, they both teams have a history, especially the Cowboys, of having great the Cowboys had great defenses, as he just said, and they still threw a lot. The Bengals, in Burrow's tenure, they've had two good defenses. One time they didn't throw that much. One time they did throw a lot and went to the Super Bowl that year. The Pickens was the other guy that I was going to argue with you about. I guess the only thing is, like, let's see. If you look at
it, really kind of stole your thunder that you used George Pickens to argue against CeeDee Lamb.
I know.
And you had to try to argue against George Pickens.
If you look at the top 10 wide receivers on a per game basis in PPR, all of them had a target per route run rate of 25.8%, except Pickens. His target per route run rate was 22.6%, was more like 24%. If you remove weeks one and two, when he wasn't really that involved. George Pickens, in the last five seasons, George Pickens has the second lowest target per hour run rate of any wide receiver to finish top 10 in PPR points per game. That's kind of interesting. But I don't think it matters because he'll run so many routes. And his target per hour run rate was higher, after a slow start to this season, those first two games, it moved up. I don't have an argument. Okay, Jamie.
I have just two things I'm curious to see. First off is... the hype that Ryan Flannoy got early in camp, does he throw a little bit of a wrench into the targets these guys are going to get? And then Jake Ferguson, is he going away?
He's not going away in the red zone. That's the problem.
Did Jamie just go away when he asked?
Jamie,
wow. Yeah. He's going away.
He just mic dropped there and left.
On Ryan Flannoy. I mean, there's no better mic drop.
No, we heard John Ferguson too. You literally said, and is Jake Ferguson going away? And then you went away.
It was well done.
Well, what do you think, Heath?
I think they're going to throw enough to where, like, I have Jake Ferguson projected for 98 targets. There's still 92 targets left for a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I think that this team throws the ball, and maybe this will be the year that it changes. But it's not just like a super high pass rate. They've run more than 1,100 plays each of the three seasons that Schottenheimer's been there. And so that's four more plays per game than everybody's running. So I just think that, yeah, Jake Ferguson's probably going to be a borderline tight end one that I think is being drafted too high, but he probably will be. I don't think they'll throw to their running backs as much as most teams, because why would you when you have CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens, and Javonte Williams was like the worst pass-catching running back in the NFL history last year.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Jamie's next round here. Must draft player or player you keep drafting.
Pick one.
Oh, let's see. The other argument I had was Swift. It's a quick argument. The last 11 games of the year when Kyle Manongai started getting involved, he averaged 13. Swift averaged 13.9 PPR fantasy points per game over a full season. That would have made him RB 18 per game. This does not count week 9, by the way, which Swift missed. Is he going to be better than that? Manongai is not out for the year. Manongai might be ready for week 1.
I don't love that he's gotten pushed up so far in draft that it's become a little difficult to draft Swift. Most of the shares I have of Swift I got in rounds 4 and in some cases rounds 5. But I still think the fact that they've just been raving about him, I think they said he's had the best camp of anybody on the team. And Manongai's out for however long Manongai's out. Probably going to be a little bit of a ramp-up period until Manongai's back in maybe the same type of workload that we saw from him last year. But he's always been sort of criminally underrated in how he's finished and how he's performed. And even last year, in some cases, I think you've mentioned that he was better when Manongai was involved in the second half of the season, or his workload didn't really change in the second half of the season. So I think there's just a good running back on a very good offense that has his competition maybe not there for however long of a time that Manongai is not there. So to go back to Heath's point, like, I don't think he's elite, because otherwise we'd be drafting him in the first 2 rounds. But I think when you get to that second group of guys, which starts really with Jacobs, I guess. So Jacobs, Kyron Williams, that group, like, he's right in the mix. He should be in the mix. He's, you know, at this point, I'm taking him ahead of Jeremiah Love. I don't know if that's going to be the case reflective of ADP, especially now that we saw Love carrying pizzas upstairs. But you have, you know, that group of guys behind him where initially, and you know, I'll full disclosure, like, I thought this is going to be a better year for Scataboo than Swift, for Judkins than Swift. And that's been a, you know, rapid change based on everything that we've seen. Happened a while ago, but it's, you know, certainly something worth noting that, you know, I thought those guys had a better outlook than him because of Manongai. And then when Manongai got hurt, it was just easy to put Swift ahead of them. And then all you're just hearing is great things about Swift.
I guess this kind of goes back to what I was talking about with Heath earlier. When do you fear that maybe you could be overreacting to preseason injuries to Manongai and Love, putting DeAndre Swift ahead of Jeremiah Love, where they probably weren't even really close a month ago?
No, but you have injury for one and backfield mate injured for the other.
But look at him carry the pizzas. He looks great.
It was great. He was, you know, no limp.
Yeah.
All good. If Jeremiah Love hits, the ceiling is higher. You know, we saw this with a high profile rookie on a bad team last year with Ashton Jeanty, that he was RB 16, you know, so I think that's kind of the range of outcomes for DeAndre Swift going into it right now. And if Manongai misses more time, you know, we've said this about, when you draft Blake Corum, what if Kyron Williams misses? If you draft Manongai, what if Swift misses? Well, when the backup misses, you know, the better player might be actually amazing. And so DeAndre Swift, if he has a stretch of games without Monongai, which could be the start of the season, that's probably a top 10 running back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's just kind of a couple of things. Like, one, I've had Swift and Love very, very close for most of the summer, just because I've expected Algier to have a bigger role than we expect, than we hope he does early in the year. But the other thing is, I feel like we're drafting Swift where he's probably going to finish unless Monongai misses time, and then he's going to smash.
All right, Dave, last round here for you of your second player that you are
drafting. Why do you keep saying round?
Who the hell do you keep drafting, Dave?
That's what I want to hear. Yeah. let's stick in Chicago and talk about Colson Loveland, who I've been gravitating toward with a late third round pick. And therefore, I've got some teams that have CeeDee Lamb and Colson Loveland on them because they're both late in those first couple of odd rounds. You take out those first eight games when he was working his way back from an injury and learning the offense, and Loveland averaged nearly 12 PPR points per game, over 7 non-PPR points per game, was getting 7.3 targets per game. That's 6 games from week 10 through 13 and in the playoffs. And that's probably a fair expectation for Loveland because Burden was on the field, Odunze was on the field. That's who he's going to be sharing with this year. That might be the floor, because we know that his last 4 games of the year, he had at least 10 targets in every game. He had 20 PPR points, 13 non-PPR points. He actually averaged 12 targets per game. Odunze missed 2 of those 4 games. I just think that he's going to have a great chance to be the target leader in Chicago. There aren't a lot of tight ends that can do this. We think that Bowers is going to do that in Las Vegas. Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. I still think McBride can be that guy in Arizona. And I think Loveland can be that guy in Chicago. And he's way more of a matchup nightmare than an inline blocker or any of that other stuff that tight ends do. I expect him to be a humongous part of the Chicago offense. Their schedule at the beginning of the year, Carolina in week 1, Minnesota in week 2, Philly in week 3, Jets in week 4. That group of 4 kind of scares me a little bit more for Swift than it does for Loveland. And I think we could see Loveland come down with some huge games then and just carry it all season long.
Okay, sounds good. So let's see if I can remember here. For Heath, it was Sam Laporta and George Pickens. For Dave, it was CeeDee Lamb and Colson Loveland. Jamie was Justin Herbert and DeAndre Swift. And we have many, many more names to give you. But let's go through the news and notes. Ashton Jeanty is on the mend, according to Raiders head coach Clint Kubiak. Mm-hmm. Ken Walker mispracticed with a foot issue. Jamie, I know Ken Walker is also on players you keep drafting list. Any concerns here about Ken Walker?
No.
Okay. Seems like it was just a maintenance day. Frank Reich called Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall bell cows, Heath. What'd you make of that?
I think we already expected Garrett Wilson to be the bell cow in that offense in terms of wide receivers, though I've never heard that phrase used for a wide receiver, but it's fine. That was kind of the expectation. What's the nice way to say it? Like, it would only make sense for Breece Hall to be that. This is a team that's going to need to score some points. He's their best running back by far. He's their best pass-catching running back by far. And if he's healthy, he may turn out that, kind of like I think with Luther Burden, the injury just gave you a great discount on Breece Hall.
Yeah.
I think I keep, after this comment yesterday, thinking about what Dave has always used as the argument against Breece Hall, which is accurate in that Frank Reich has always used multiple running backs, and Frank Reich has been fired everywhere he's been for multiple reasons. This could be one of them, that he hasn't featured his best players enough. Like, use your best guys. I don't know. That's just crazy.
I love the sound of that. I wish he'd listen to you. And the Jets staff last year basically listened, and they gave Breece Hall 17.4 touches a game. That's pretty close to bell cow work, if you ask me. And he's still averaged 13.
But everything is upgraded to whatever degree you want to say upgraded, it's upgraded.
Yeah.
I hope so. Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, he was a bell cow last year, and he was RB21 per game. Because bell cow for the Jets last year was 258 carries and 38 catches. That was a 17-game pace. Hall missed one game. They just didn't run enough plays. They've been bottom 3 in goal line carries 3 straight years. It can't get any worse. right? Like, that's the thing. It can't get any worse. He was RB21 per game. So if you're drafting
sure, he has a groin injury.
Well, it doesn't really seem like he has a serious groin injury here.
Not yet.
But if he's healthy, I don't know how he finishes worse than RB21, you know? It seems like that was his floor.
Where is he being drafted right now? Like,
right, that, he's not being drafted anywhere near RB21.
Right behind Swift, isn't he? I think he's RB20.
Yeah, he's like, I thought he was 19 last time I checked. So that's
19, yeah.
I think that's perfectly fair value for what we're talking about right now. He was getting drafted a lot higher before the injury, but now you're getting a discount on what could be a great player.
I see RB.
He and Travis
fantasy.
He and Travis Etienne are two ships passing in the night. They yes. are. Next time you blink, Etienne will be ahead, and Hall will be 20.
Oh man, now you got me thinking about how often I blink. Jamar Chase hyperextended his knee. Is he still?
That was scary.
Is he still the third overall pick for you guys, Jamar Chase?
He's fine.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Sam Laporta's back. Mike Evans missed practice with a groin injury. They're still downplaying it, but.
Is anybody downgrading Mike Evans yet? Like, yeah. I can't because I was already so low, but
where do you have him?
Like round 7.
Yeah, I've got him at the end of round 6.
Okay. He's fallen from round 5 to round 6 for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm, Brian Thomas Jr. got hurt, but
Adam, how do you feel about Mike Evans?
Yeah, downgrading. Like, downgrading Evans.
Like, you know, it's bad when you'd rather draft Ramondre Stevenson.
I think that's selling Ramondre Stevenson a little short, but no, I wouldn't rather draft Ramondre. I'd still rather have Mike Evans.
Oh, okay.
The question is, I just don't know if I want Parker Washington and Christian Watson and Jameson Williams ahead of Mike Evans.
I do.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, I know for you guys, but I've always been like super high on Mike Evans.
Yeah, well, let's change. If Frank Reich can change, then you can change too, Adam.
Everybody can change. But yeah, I still think he's got really good sort of sleeper appeal at late round 6. I think if he's healthy, he's going to be really good. That's where I come out on it.
That's a big if. It's already 2 injuries this training camp.
Yeah. Chris Olave left practice, got the wind knocked out of him. He should be fine. Travion Henderson not back at practice yet. He slipped the other day. Alec Pierce is expected to practice next week. Did you guys move Alec Pierce up on the news?
No.
Have you just left that in your notes for all of training camp? Because he has been expected to practice next week. Did you say, listen, we make too much of these things sometimes, but we talked about the Jeremiah Love walking with the pizza. Did you guys see the video of Alec Pierce walking from behind on the
weird,
field?
Weird, right?
You did. Yeah. Yes. His legs do not look the same size. He did not look like he was walking like with a normal gait. I'm very concerned.
Okay. We've got Nate Atkins of The Athletic saying that Devontae Adams was great in joint practices against the Cowboys and the Saints. He was virtually uncoverable. That's Devontae Adams.
That's good. How long has Puka been out for? It's been like 2 weeks already with the groin, right?
Yeah, he's been out.
I believe 2 weeks is close, yeah.
I'm starting to get interested in Devontae again.
Was that sloth from the Goonies? No, that was Sylvester Stallone and from Rocky IV. Everybody can change. If I can change, and you
imagine
can change,
sloth can going, change. We can change.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that my Sylvester Stallone sounds a little bit too much like sloth. Anyway, Ian Rappaport says the Falcons quarterback job is basically Michael Penix's for the taking, and the Falcons still haven't named a starter. Rams edge rusher Myles Garrett remains out with a knee issue. The couple of teams that might, you know, maybe, you know what we need to do is an offensive line episode. We need to do that. But two teams that need some help. The Commanders signed offensive tackle DJ Humphreys. The Chiefs acquired offensive lineman Joshua Izudu from the Giants for a 7th round pick in 2028. I don't think these are going to really move the needle for those teams, but it's just a reminder that like the Chiefs are struggling at right tackle right now. And the Commanders obviously could be struggling on their offensive line without Tunsil. Giants wide receiver Calvin Austin sustained a potentially serious knee injury.
It's a torn ACL. He's done.
Oh, yep. That stinks.
Yeah.
Rookie tight ends Eli Stowers for the Eagles, Oscar Delp for the Saints. They have hamstring injuries. And Jets rookie tight end Kenyon Sadiq is going to have his workload scaled back early in the season. He's missed all of camp with an injury. Hopefully plays week 1, but won't have a full role. All right, we can get back to players we keep on drafting. And Heath gave us Laporta and Pickens. You've got 3 other players. One of them is DeAndre Swift. Let me ask you with Rashee Rice. I talked about this with Jamie, I think, last week, but it's like, based on what he's done, I don't get how he's a late second round pick or third round pick. He should be a late first round pick based on what he's done. Why do you think there's such value in Rashee Rice?
Well, I think some of it is the knucklehead factor. Some of it is the, like, people are just worried that he's going to do something else that he shouldn't do. Some of it is the video of him running a deep post where he looked kind of like Alec Pierce, except he was trying to run. And then some of it is Kenneth Walker and fear that all these screens they're throwing to him are going to take away from Rashee Rice's target share. I thought there was a pretty good quote from Eric Bieniemy came out yesterday or the day before talking about how he thinks that Rice can be even better. Sounded pretty optimistic. I don't see anybody in this receiving core that's going to cut into his target share. And the thing that I love about drafting him where you can is that we can take a 10-15% hit in target share, which would be maybe 20 targets off the top, and give those to Kenneth Walker. And he's still a good pick late in round two, early in round three.
So Nico Collins, George Pickens, Rashee Rice, how do you rank them? Heath, Dave, Jamie, go ahead. Nico, Pickens.
Pickens, Rice, Nico.
Collins, Pickens, Rice.
Collins, Rice, Pickens.
It's a tough call. It's a tough call that people are going to have to make. Those are great, great picks at the 2-3 turn. How about Bowers? Would you take Bowers ahead of all those guys?
I've got Bowers ahead of Pickens and Rice.
I have
Bowers ahead of Pickens and Rice.
It really depends too. Like, I just took Bowers ahead of, no, I think that maybe ahead of Nico in the FFT Open. Rice went right before me at the 2-3 turn, and then I took Pickens and Bowers, but it's a two wide receiver league and I'm playing against 431 other teams. And so I wanted the upside of have Brock Bowers on my team, and hopefully I can find a great wide receiver too later.
All right, give me 30 seconds on Brock Purdy, and then we'll take a break, and we'll get to Jamie and Dave's list.
Have I said this 17 times yet this year? Through week 17 last year, Brock Purdy was the number one quarterback on a per-game basis. Over the last three seasons, Brock Purdy is the QB4 on a per-game basis. Listen, there's lots of question marks about his receiving weapons. I can't imagine it's going to be worse than it was last year, and he was awesome. And he's even talking about how, like, I think Purdy is one of those guys that if you look at what he's done as a rusher over the last couple of years, which over the last two seasons, his 17-game pace for rushing is like 360 yards and 5.5 touchdowns. And it seems like, yeah, but you probably can't count on that. And the only thing I've heard about Brock Purdy rushing was Purdy himself talking about how he wants to do more with his legs this year.
Yeah. All right. You love taking Brock Purdy. And we'll look at just NFC draft position over the last 5 days. Brock Purdy is QB 12 in between Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff. And you don't.
He's QB 8 for me, and he's closer to Dak at QB 7 than he is to the other guys.
All right, we're going to take a break. We got a lot more guys to get to here on the players we keep on drafting list. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Jamie's list. Jamie's already given us Justin Herbert and DeAndre Swift. A lot more names on the list if you want to just fire through them. Ready? Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, it's hard to avoid the rapid rise that I've seen in ADP, which is a little frustrating because he was such a good price for what the upside could be. So now I think on our site, he's up to QB 7 or 8. Just very, very rapid rise, but it makes sense. You know, you see what he could be coming off of last year, over 30 fantasy points per game to close the season, including the playoffs. The run game could be a little suspect, clearly, with the loss of Travis Etienne. I feel like when we talk about in past tense, we have to say Etienne, but Travis Etienne. And, you know, here's these, you know, receivers that maybe the best list of best group of receivers that he's ever played with. If Travis Hunter is going to do anything significant. So I just think that this is one of the better breakout quarterbacks for the season. You know, again, you got the little portion of it last year, and we've seen that snippets from him over the course of his career. I just hope he can put it together. So Liam Cohen's gotten great production from the last two quarterbacks that he's worked with, Baker Mayfield 2024, Trevor Lawrence 2025. Big influence on the rushing production for both of those quarterbacks. I don't think we're getting 9 rushing touchdowns again from Lawrence, but as I think we talked about on Fantasy Football Tech Express, I think you can get 400 yards and maybe 3 to 5 touchdowns from him on the ground, and I think that's going to boost his numbers significantly.
So right now ADP has Caleb Williams as QB8, Trevor Lawrence QB9, Justin Herbert QB10. That's CBS ADP. How would you rank them? Caleb, Lawrence, and Herbert, and they're all within about 14 picks of each other.
Herbert, Lawrence, Caleb.
Dave?
Double checking. I've got Herbert, Lawrence, Caleb Williams, all top 10.
You want me to do it as well?
Oh, yeah.
Purdy, Lawrence, Herbert, Caleb.
Okay. Let's go to some more. Ken Walker, I don't know if there's much else you want to say about Ken Walker, but I'll just ask you now. We got Hampton, Walker, Barkley, Henry, Jamie. How do you rank? Oh, and let's throw Achan in there. So Hampton, Walker, Barkley, Achan, Henry. How do you rank them?
Walker, Hampton, Achan, Barkley, Genty.
Henry?
Barkley, Henry, Genty.
Is there anything for you guys when you're deciding between those running backs, Chase Brown and James Cook and Taylor and McCaffrey are off the board, and you're deciding between those, call them early round two running backs, Hampton, Walker, Henry, Barkley, Achan, Genty. Is there one deciding factor that makes, Jamie, you take Walker first? Dave, who I don't know who you take first, Heath, et cetera, but Jamie, you can start. What's the one deciding factor for Walker?
I think just getting the opportunity to be the featured guy, because when he's been the featured guy in his career, he's been pretty awesome. And now he gets that chance. We saw it in the playoffs when Charbonnet was not there, scored more points per game in that 4-game stretch when you factor in the divisional round through the Super Bowl than Christian McCaffrey did for the season, points per game wise. So like I'm terrified of the Dolphins offense, which is why I take him over Achan. Just the other report we got yesterday, it just gets worse by the day.
What was that?
It was, Omar Kelly. And then another one of their, maybe it was the day before, but Omar Kelly and then Joe Shad, when Malik Willis brought the team together in the middle of the field and just said, guys, we got to do something better. Basically like, if they're not producing against their own defense, which is not going to be good, like it's going to be a struggle. So I don't care how many times Achan's going to touch the ball. He's not going to score a lot of touchdowns. And I'm just terrified of the entire process of where he's getting drafted. So I'd much rather take the guy on the Chiefs that Andy Reid's had a lot of success with his backfields when he's had good running backs. Hampton, I think, you know, we'll see what this Keaton Mitchell injury is and the timeshare that could still unfold. Forget about what Mike McDaniel said. They're going to use a couple of guys there. So I like Walker's situation a little bit better. Henry is obviously such a wild card here, but their offensive line just got worse. And, you know, no fullback. We'll see how that goes. So it's just real more nitpicking there. And Barkley, I think just coming off the year that he had, he'll be better. But I think Walker's trajectory for me is a little bit safer. So that's why I lean Walker the highest. Take Walker the highest.
Dave, your favorite in that group of five and why?
Achan. Jamie talked about you want a guy that's going to have a feature workload. Achan's had it the past two seasons. The worst he's been is 17.6 full PPR points per game. That's better than any year Kenneth Walker's had. And I granted, Walker is going to get a great opportunity in Kansas City. But the thing that I keep going back to, two of them with Walker, and I've moved him up. I'm taking him now as a top 15 pick. Number one, we know that he's a little injury prone. Seahawks were afraid of it. That's why they didn't run him out there all the time until the end of the year when they knew that they were going to let him go into free agency, and he's already dealing with a foot injury now. It's minor. That's fine. Two, Patrick Mahomes is still the quarterback of this team. And from all accounts who have gone to Kansas City's camp, he looks the same as he did before and that there are no lingering effects of the ACL. And push comes to shove, I still think Mahomes is going to do his thing in the offense, and Walker will be – I say next in line, and I don't necessarily mean that as a bad thing. Obviously, they're going to want to run the ball more, and Walker gives them the chance to be more effective, and I think Walker will be good. But I'm just a little bit worried about Walker having that offensive player of the year type season because I'm not sure if he can play enough games to earn that award, because I'm not sure he's going to get the ball in the high leverage situations that we want him to every single time. Whereas Achane, yes, he's going to get the ball a lot. I am more convinced than ever that he's also going to catch plenty of passes. Saw it in the joint practice against the Giants. He had a couple of checkdowns. He had three design targets in the game. I think that we're going to see him be a big, big part of what they do. And that was an in-practice adjustment, because that Giants pass rush was getting to Malik Willis really quickly. So that encouraged me. And I don't think he's going to be as good as he was last year, Devon Achane. I don't think he's going to be 20 points per game. But I bet he gets to 17. And I think that that's going to be better than Kenneth Walker. And so Achane is at the top of the list for me. I love the case for Hampton. He's ahead of Walker, too. My top three from that list: Achane, Hampton, Walker, back to back to back, end of round one, beginning of round two.
Okay. Heath?
Achane, Walker, Hampton, everything Dave said about Achane.
Cool. Jamie also likes Jordan Mason. I think I took him 80th overall, Jamie, in the FFT Open. Is that too early for Jordan Mason?
He's kind of getting to that point where it's a little too soon, but that's kind of where I think you see a little bit of a tear break in the running backs. You know, so once you get past the Patriots guys, the Steelers guys, you know, he's in the mix for me with, you know, Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt and the Broncos guys, and, you know, start to get into that, you know, group of ugh. I think for Mason, you know, the reports and the preseason action don't mesh so far. So it's really, what do you believe? Because everything you hear out of Minnesota is Mason is their running downs guy. Then we get to I don't think they played in the second preseason game, but the first preseason game, you get Mason and Jones sort of alternating drives here.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit tough to buy that Mason should be going so far ahead of Jones, or even ahead of Jones to begin with, because if he's going to share rushing downs work, he's definitely going to have passing downs work, because that's not what Mason does. He's got 28 catches in his career. So, you know, Dave has brought this up. You know, they've implemented a different rushing scheme to favor Mason, or that caters more to what Mason does. I don't think they did just for Mason.
Yeah. Yes.
Caters more to what Mason has had success in when you go back to his days in San Francisco. But if you just look at it, he's the younger running back. He averages 5 yards per carry for his career, 4.8 yards per carry during his time with Minnesota. This is a much more explosive rusher at this point than Aaron Jones. And then you factor in Jones's durability, where he missed time last year and fought through a bunch of injuries the year before. Plus, he's going to be 33. So I just think when you're looking at it, if you want a safe, borderline flex, good backup running back, maybe if things break right, because he did average over 13 PPR points per game in the 5 games Jones missed last year, that's the type of player you're talking about. So not to the same heights of like a Blake Corum, who should go ahead of him, or Monongai when he's right. If you're just looking for, okay, who has higher potential if the starter gets hurt. But if you're looking for like a safe type of RB4, really, I think Jordan Mason qualifies.
Packers, Bears, Bucks, Dolphins, Saints. First 5 games of the year for Minnesota. I think that's a great platform for Mason to take off. I agree with Jamie on the Aaron Jones thing. There's something that's not connecting here, because I thought Jones looked pretty good in the preseason. But I would imagine that the Vikings will kind of treat the veteran with kid gloves and not use him a ton. And Lena Mason, I love the idea of getting him in that round 8 range as a running back that you can start the season with in your lineup.
But we all agree that 80 is too early. Right.
80's too early.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I said yesterday, 80's too early in theory, but the way the draft was going, Jordan Mason was one of the last potential starting running backs. Like I consider him differently than I consider Kenneth Gainwell and Rashad White.
You should.
Those are the guys who were going after. Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt also went after him, and I think they're pretty similar. But Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt went like 7 picks after him. So it wasn't realistic to get a starting running back in the hundreds. Of course, I think Jordan Mason. Yeah.
I'm sorry. And I didn't mean to interrupt, but you did. This is the podcast league draft?
No, this was the FFT, my FFT open league.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was going to say the podcast league. How many running backs did you have when you made that? So you only had one?
I think he was my third.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really like when you start to compare him and several of the guys that, you know, were mentioned, including Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, like when you start to compare him to Wandale Robinson and Quentin Johnston and Cortland Sutton and those type of receivers, that does it make sense to take your third or fourth running back versus your fourth or fifth receiver? And where does the upside lie with those players?
I absolutely, that's a great point and a great question. And I absolutely think you, not in every case, but I lean running back there because I know receiver, there's like 30 more receivers, including the Jalen Coker and Jaden Reed.
Right. So that's the perfect way to frame it. Like, do you want to have Jordan Mason and Deshaun Stribling, for example, or Jordan Mason and Jalen Coker, or do you want to have Wandale Robinson and RJ Harvey?
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, I think we've all talked about how you get to rounds 9, 10, 11, maybe not 11, but 8, 9, 10, and you're still looking at some wide receivers like, oh, I'm happy to get this guy here. And I think it dries up at running back pretty early. You know, 80, I don't know. Like ADP tells a different story. What happened in the draft, the FFT Open draft, made me take Jordan Mason because I didn't want to be without a reliable number three.
You can't really rely strictly on ADP because now we're starting to see kickers and defenses get pushed up to levels that the casual drafters take that most seasoned fantasy players do not.
Yeah, that's why tiers are so important at every position. All right, let's wrap up, Jamie. Here you got Coker and Jaden Reed late, Isaiah Likely and Travis Kelce, but running out of time, so I'm just going to ask you about, well, real quick on Likely and Kelce, how much earlier do you take Likely than Kelce?
Maybe two rounds. You know, I think, you know, once you start to get to that group of the middle group of tight ends, which I think still ends with Fannin, I would take Likely over Fannin, but that ends with Fannin. And so when I see Fannin come off the board and I don't have a tight end at that point, that's when I start to look for Likely. If I miss Likely, it's usually Kelce's the fallback option.
So with two wide receivers that could go in round three, Devontae Smith and T. Higgins, they're on the players you keep drafting list. Do you ever take both of them, or is this a decision you have to make, Devontae Smith, T. Higgins?
Higgins falls much more often than Smith does, you know, and I think we'll start to see Smith rise a couple of spots now that he's back in practice, and there's no legitimate concern, not that there was ever a concern, but no legitimate concern about his hamstring. So I was in a draft last night, 12-team PPR. I had the 11th pick. I got Smith at the end of round three. I think Higgins might have went early round four. So, you know, you see Higgins, I think, much more in the round four, early part of round four range. So Higgins is a late round three for me. Smith is an early round three pick for me. I just, whenever I see Higgins in round four and I can draft him, I do it.
Yeah. He's basically been a top 16 wide receiver every year based on his points per game. When Burrow and Chase and Higgins have all been healthy, performs like a top 16 wide receiver, except for a terrible 2023 season, I believe.
That's it.
Higgins is awesome. All right, Dave, you said CeeDee Lamb. You said Colson Loveland. Jaylen Waddle is the other guy I was going to disagree with you on, just because I just fear the targets. Like, he had a 33-yard catch, I think it was, in that preseason game. He looked great. But Sutton had two targets on that drive. Waddle had one. Not to say it'll play out that way. And then Sutton's always a big factor in the end zone, and Waddle really hasn't been. So I love all of your calls, and you've talked about Waddle a lot. This is the one that, as a friend of Dave Richard, I get the most nervous about, the way it will play out.
And I'm not nervous at all. I think the Broncos had clear intention that they wanted to improve their receiving core and not lean on the corporation of, or I should say conglomerate of, Sutton, Franklin, Mims, Pat Bryant. I know Bryant's gotten some great pub in camp, and he's looked good. They needed somebody like Jaylen Waddle to stretch the field both vertically and horizontally, line up anywhere, catch short passes, make a play after the catch, catch downfield passes, make a play after the catch. And we've seen it from Sean Payton before. When he's got that dude at wide receiver, he hyper-targets him. It was Michael Thomas many moons ago in New Orleans, Marcus Colston before that. He hasn't quite had that guy in Denver, but 2 years ago, Courtland Sutton had a ton of targets then. And I don't really buy into the theory that targets are going to be spread all around. And I don't think the Broncos want to do that when it comes to Waddle because of the investment that they've made in him. I think he's outstanding. I love the way that he looked in the preseason game. The camp reports have been great too. People are worried about him missing time. He's played at least 14 games every year of his career. He is not shackled by Tyreek Hill and Devon Achane in a pop offense in Miami now. This is going to be a better version. Bo Nix also looks good. The offensive line is healthy. I'm actually hyped about this Broncos offense. And I think that their run game is the biggest question mark of all. And now here's somebody that can help take some pressure off that run game on short screens, those layup throws that we talk about, Adam. I think Jaylen Waddle is going to be one of the best values on draft day. Love his ADP. I would take him a full round ahead of his ADP.
So you'd take
ADP is amazing.
Is a what is let's see
round five
on CBS. Yeah,
I mean, I think I have him as like a round three pick because I'm insane. He's like a round three, four pick for me. So I'm getting him in pretty much every draft I'm in because I'm taking him higher than anyone else on the planet. Like Jalen Waddle's mom isn't taking him as high as I'm taking him at this point.
Someone asked in the chat, Dave, Waddle or Garrett Wilson?
I have Wilson in full PPR, one spot ahead of Waddle.
Okay. Okay. More players.
I mean, he's a bell cow receiver after all, Garrett Wilson.
I'm curious why you think their run game is going to be bad though.
Because I don't think they've got a guy that they really want to put the whole workload on. And so they're going to use a rotation of three and they'll be effective, but I don't know if that necessarily means that they're going to be good. And I think it'll take them a few weeks to get comfortable with the idea of Jonah Coleman getting some work. We'll see if J.K. Dobbins can hold up and be better than he was last year. R.J. Harvey as a runner really wasn't great last year, hasn't been great so far this year. He's more of a pass catcher. I think that I feel a lot better about Bo Nix throwing than I do about Bo Nix handing off.
I wonder if Sean Payton feels that way, though.
I don't think Dave said the running game would be bad. I think he said it's the biggest question mark.
It's the biggest question mark. But it could be bad, too. I mean, especially, I'll say if J.K. Dobbins misses time. Because I love Jonah Coleman. He's one of the guys on my list, too. Taking him in the double-digit rounds every draft that I can. But I don't know if he's truly ready. I know Sean Payton is talking like Coleman is just ready. I'm not 100% sure that he is. And so there could be some lingering effects of the decisions that the Broncos have made with their run game over the last couple of seasons.
You also have Isaiah Likely on the players you keep on drafting list, just like Jamie. Is he someone?
I moved him back ahead of Pitts in full PPR too, after what I saw in the joint practice against the Dolphins.
Do we think it's going to stay that way when Neighbors is back, which seems to be week one?
Yeah, this is the, remember how like Zach Ertz had this middle of the field role in Washington where he would just catch all these short throws whenever the number one read was covered?
Yeah.
I think that's Likely's role with a little bit more on top. I think there's going to be some plays where Likely works downfield a little bit more often. He's got the athleticism to make plays after the catch. To me, it's the only part of the Giants offense that I'm confident in at this point, as far as like naming specific players, because I'm really confused on the run game at this point. And I think Neighbors is going to be great. I'm drafting him like Neighbors is going to be great, but I can't say with 100% certainty that Neighbors will be great. I do think Likely will be very good and worth a round 7/8 pick. I believe that's ahead of ADP. And his track record when he's had volume has been outstanding for fantasy. Starting to think he won't be 12.5 PPR points per game like he's been in 8 of 9 career games with at least 6 targets. But he can get to, let's call it 11. And that's really good value in the middle of the draft from a tight end that not everybody's going to gravitate toward, but they should.
Heath, how you doing over there?
Oh, it's been good.
Yeah. I'm going to let you introduce the Parker Washington portion of this show because this is someone that Dave says he keeps on drafting, Parker Washington. What questions did you have for Dave about Parker Washington?
Thanks. I did draft Parker Washington. I mentioned this in a draft a couple days ago. And Dave, I took him before Christian Watson and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Brian Thomas Jr., which I think everybody's taking him ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. now, but taking him ahead of Watson and Harrison in particular really made me feel like I know I did this so I could have him on one of my teams, but I feel stupid.
No, you is just that, drafted.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you drafted a guy that might end up getting volume and the same type of role that we've seen from Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that's exciting. Wow. And seeing him in person and watching him leap over two Bucks defenders for a touchdown in red zone drills from Trevor Lawrence was exciting. Watching him leap and do the exact same thing on the other sideline, not for a touchdown, but for a first down in drills, that was exciting. And he's working all areas of the field. He's willing to run over the middle. Definitely a ton of horizontal routes, just like what we've seen from St. Brown, JSN, that ilk of wide receiver. And I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to be the top target getter in Jacksonville. BTJ is awesome. Hopefully the shoulder is fine. Sounds like it's going to be okay. The team just shut him down in practice. And Liam Cohen said afterwards, yeah, we're just going to get him ready for Cleveland. And Parker Washington was still dominating clearly the number one guy. The Bucks knew it, and he was still doing very, very well. There was one play where he had a pass go off his hands. It was a bullet from Trevor Lawrence over the middle of the field. I'm going to forgive him for that one. Everything else that he did was pretty great. I am taking him over every single one of those wide receivers that you said in full PPR. In non-PPR, I might be a little squeamish about some of those names, mainly Christian Watson, because I'm excited about him too. But I don't think Parker Washington is going away. Tack on the question mark of their run game. Tootin looked better than Rodriguez yesterday for what that's worth. And he seems to have a little more juice than Rodriguez, but they split pretty evenly in practice. And I just think that Washington's going to be locked into like 7 targets per game. He averaged 6.3 per game overall last year.
I had a draft last night where I took Washington in round 6. And then in round 8, Thomas was still sitting there. I'm like, you know what? It's just too,
hell yeah,
too nice. Good of value.
Nice. Yeah.
So
Parker Washington, if he's good this year, like really good, it would be so improbable for a 6th round pick who in the first 36 games of his career, 3 seasons, 3.5 seasons, averaged 37 yards per game, was not on anyone's fantasy roster unless they had return yards, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finishes the season really strong, including an amazing playoff game.
Coaching.
I'm not ruling it out. It just, we've never seen, I wouldn't say never, but I can't remember anything like that with a day 3 pick start their career that slow. That'd be cool.
And the thing for me that helps me fully believe in Parker Washington is that I've seen him develop. And I remember the joint practice with the Dolphins last year, and he was close to making plays with Trevor Lawrence. And then by the middle of last season, he had the opportunity. Travis Hunter got hurt right before Hunter got hurt. It was supposed to be Hunter who was going to be the big play guy and that middle of the field guy for Jacksonville. And Washington just took the role and ran with it. And he's been in simpatico with Trevor Lawrence ever since.
Okay, Dave also has Patrick Mahomes, who is now going ahead of Jackson Dart in CBS ADP.
He should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How about Purdy or Mahomes?
I've got Mahomes ahead, but the most compelling thing I've heard from Heath this year has been the case for Brock Purdy. And it's really, really, you can buy into it very easily.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I really love it. And it helps that Stribling has looked better than, you know, that what the thought was on him before the draft. It's almost like the Niners, and the Niners have screwed up so many wide receiver picks before, but it looks like they finally got one that might end up being just right. And they've worked really hard to fast track Stribling into the first team offense. And he will help Brock Purdy. At bare minimum, Purdy is a fantastic value on draft day.
He is. So many of those quarterbacks are, but yeah. Mahomes was like a top 3 quarterback for much of the year.
Rushing though, that's the thing. He's not going to do that again.
He's not going to do that again, but I bet push comes to shove, he will leave some pockets and start running and sliding.
Obviously he's still going to run, but you go back to, there's a pretty telltale example when he busted his knee on the goal line, tush-push, whatever they were calling it. And then they just stopped doing that because, let's not ruin our best asset.
Right.
You know,
that was just a regular QB sneak.
Now.
Never done it again.
Yep. That's fair. But that was multiple years ago.
Yes,
1 year ago.
Because Andy Reid's a smart guy. He realizes, let's not do that.
Well, but we're not drafting Mahomes anywhere close to where he finished last year either. And it's not just because he's coming back from the ACL. Again, it sounds like he's over it. It's because Walker's there. And Walker's absolutely going to take
it. Also, the 2 years prior to that, he was a mediocre fantasy quarterback.
He was. But last year is what I'm kind of leaning toward. I don't think he's going to be as good as he was last year. That's going to be impossible. But I still think he's one of the top 12 quarterbacks in draft day. And the fact that I've had him in like round 12 in some leagues, and I don't even care. I've drafted Josh Allen and Mahomes on the same team. I'm just not going to let somebody else get that kind of value that late in the draft. Mm-hmm. I'm not reaching for him.
Yeah.
But he's absolutely got potential to still be an awesome asset.
And based on 2 drafts that I'm doing right now, one of them ended, they're both slow drafts. Jackson Dart would actually be on my list of players I keep drafting. He's gone from a guy that I thought had one of the worst ADPs to like nobody wants Jackson Dart anymore. And I'm willing to take a shot with, you know, one of my last picks because he was so good last season without Malik Nabers. So let's see if I understand it's been a really bad camp for the Giants offense. The same things were said about the Bears offense last year with a new offensive coordinator.
That's true.
And all and the Titans. Things. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so here's real quick my list of players I keep drafting. Chris Godwin. In a wide receiver heavy draft, I will take Chris Godwin in round 6. I like what Dave tweeted about Chris Godwin, what Baker Mayfield said about him. He's going to play in the slot. It's going to be really good for him. I will take him ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. If I want a safe player, I will take Godwin ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. If I'm looking for more upside and I feel good at receiver, I'll take BTJ. He has been...
I take him over Thomas. Okay.
Fair enough. He's been a top 17 wide receiver per game 5 times in his career. He has been a top 3 receiver twice in his career. That's insane on a per game basis. Chris Godwin...
I mean, now you love that 80-yard touchdown.
No, I'm. He needs to be a better player than he was last year because he was really bad last year.
He's in a role that's very familiar to him and Mayfield. I felt like they were on the same page. I thought Godwin also moved well in the joint practice against Jacksonville. I like this call a lot, Adam.
Travis Achan is now a player that I keep on drafting. I think late round 3 is certainly in play. I don't want to overreact too much because Alvin Kamara might not miss much time and Kamara might be the third down back. But a reminder, Travis Achan was the number 14 running back per game in full PPR, a little bit better than that in the other formats, without being the third down back last year. He had 17.4 touches per game. That ranked 16th among running backs, and he finished as a top 14 running back. And he should be drafted around 15th or so overall, but I think he's got a lot of potential because he's clearly the best running back in the Saints backfield. Zach Charbonnet is a player I've been drafting a lot. I don't know. I don't really think Zach Charbonnet could be a league winner, but if he gets back early in the season, first of all, I like putting him in an IR spot, freeing up a spot and just, you know, picking up somebody on waivers. But if he becomes their goal line back again, and he's pretty damn good at that, Zach Charbonnet could be a very good player. And Derrick Henry is not someone that I really went into drafts trying to draft, but I have him in 2 of my 3 FFT open leagues. So Derrick Henry, look, top 7 running back per game in full PPR for a guy that never catches the ball in 6 of the last 7 seasons. And he's being drafted as something like RB11 right now. I know he's 32, but he scores a ton. And one of the reasons why he didn't have such a great year last year compared to his 7th per game compared to other years is Lamar Jackson missed some time and he really struggled when Lamar Jackson was out. So if you assume Lamar Jackson's going to be healthy, should be more touchdown opportunities for Derrick Henry. Here goes. I sped. I followed too closely. I ran a stop sign. I almost hit a Chevy. I sped some more. I failed the yield. I changed lanes without signaling while speeding. That was the liar, liar scene where he just talks really fast. You know? Okay. That's my list. I think we're done. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Oh, no, we'll talk to you tonight. Oh, my gosh. We'll talk to you tonight. With the Draftathon show, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern. See you later, everybody. Talk to you.
Paramount Podcasts.